Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
The Coast Guard. The oldest continuous seagoing service of the United States. I still remember the day Owen got in. Widest smile I ever saw on him, apart from his wedding day, of course. It had been a dream of his since we were kids. Having shared our love for the ocean, I understood him. But where he had gone for the Coast Guard, I had settled for a swimming instructor. Not as fancy, but I enjoyed it. Through the years, Owen and I would meet up and share typical stories. Nothing that seemed too out of the ordinary. It was only a few months after he joined the Coast Guard when I started to see him change. His demeanour, his expression, and overall energy that he'd bring just wasn't the same. It wasn't until I finally confronted him about it when he began to really open up about what had been happening. The following are some of the stories he shared with me over the years. Story 1. If you guys know anything about the Coast Guard, you'll know that one of their main missions is search and rescue. One particular story involved the search for this kid after his parents reported him being carried out by a rip current. The thing that stood out about this story, though, was how the kid had gone missing. According to the parents, they'd brought their kid along with a friend for a beach day. While the parents had been laying out in the sand, the kids had gone to the shore to see which one could hold their breath the longest underwater. The mother claimed she could see them both not too far from the shore when they went under. Less than a minute later, the friend's head popped back out, but her son's never did. The kid's friend appeared to be just as confused as the mother, going back under, only to pop out and look around. They looked around, but eventually began to panic, alerting the entire beach, at which point someone called 911. The kid's friend had told them that they'd been staring right at each other before going under, and that he'd kept his eyes closed underwater. When he came up and didn't see him, he went down again, eyes open this time, but the kid was gone. The parents had assumed it was a rip current because they didn't know what else could have taken him so suddenly. The chances of it only taking one of the kids when they were only a few feet away from each other wasn't likely though. And any type of marine life large enough to take a kid that size would have been spotted that close to the shore. Owen told me they spent the better part of a week searching for the kid, but they never found any traces of him. Story 2. One case he told me about that freaked him out involved the report of a foreign vessel being spotted in the area. He was sent out with a team to investigate. When they got there, a fishing vessel had anchored next to a sailboat in poor condition. When questioned later, the fisherman claimed he'd only wanted to help after spotting the sailboat and didn't want any trouble. When Owen's team boarded the vessel, they found a young married couple. They were hiding in the inner cabin in a closet space, both visibly shaken. Owen tried talking to them, but they responded in another language. When the team took them outside, the couple trembled, looking around them in fear. Owen said it was a cloudless day and the ocean was extremely peaceful, so he didn't understand what had them so frightened. They kept rambling something the team couldn't understand. One of them even yelled at some point. Someone eventually realized they were speaking Italian and were able to find a translator to talk to them over their radio device. The translator told the team that the couple was incoherent, that they were rambling about the storm and a black and white thing. They weren't getting anything from the couple out there, so they decided to take them back to the mainland. The translator managed to calm them down and they agreed to head back together. On the way there, one of them started talking to Owen. She was shaking again and looked terrified. Her words seemed almost as if she was pleading to him about something. Owen got the translator on the radio, but he told Owen to ignore her. Easier said than done. Looking back, he remembered feeling uncomfortable, the woman being only one of the reasons. He said he felt very anxious while the translator continued to advise that he ignore her. She eventually started to yell though, and the team tried restraining her while the translator attempted to calm her down. She pushed on, screaming, fighting them while looking at something behind them. She was really losing it when they all heard a loud splash behind their boat. The woman went silent then. She looked for her husband, who had fallen asleep early on and sat beside them. Neither one spoke for the rest of the trip. The proper authorities took the couple once they reached land, and Owen didn't hear anything about them after that. He did manage to speak to the translator not long after though. Curious, Owen asked him what the woman had been saying. The translator laughed, told him she was nuts, but then went on to say that she'd been repeating the same thing over and over and over again. It's coming. It's here. It wants you now. Story 3. Another bizarre missing person story that also involved kids. In this one, the parents had just bought a boat and took the family of five out for the day. They had anchored themselves a bit out of the way from what Owen told me. At some point, the parents took their eyes off the kids. They said it must have happened within 5 minutes, if not less. But suddenly, they heard the splashes. The parents rushed down, but only saw the after effect of their fall. The water already adjusting back. The oldest child, a boy about 14 or 15, said he'd seen them watching the water from the side of the boat. He looked away just before they both went in. Both parents jumped into the water, but couldn't find either one of the kids. This was a girl aged 6 and a boy about 8. After failing to locate either one, the father radioed for help. When Owen's team arrived, they actually managed to find the little boy. His head had been poking out of the water not too far from where the boat had been anchored. Owen said they'd asked how he'd gotten so far out on his own, and the boy told them that a man with weird eyes had asked him and his sister if they wanted to go look for treasure together. The man had apparently climbed to the boat, quote, like Spider-Man, and pulled them into the ocean, then dragged them away underwater. The man then told the boy that he'd take his sister to the treasure first and then come back for him, that he was not to move from there until someone came. That was the point they'd found the boy. Following this, they searched long and wide for the girl, both by sea and air. They assumed the girl had been kidnapped, but no vessels were found in the area. It was Owen's longest search and rescue mission up to that point, taking a lot of manpower and a heavy toll on him. While glad they had found the boy, the family was a wreck, blaming themselves for not keeping their eyes on their children, the oldest kid especially. Owen said the boy had been non-stop crying and even asked to please let him help in looking for her. A little over a week later, they were calling it off, having found nothing. No one wanted to make the call, but Owen said he could hear the screams on the other side of the phone, even from a distance. The weirdest thing though, Owen had told me, was the description the younger boy had given of the man. He described his eyes as weird, in that they were large and had different coloured circles inside. He looked at this to mean multiple pupils in each eye. Not only that, but he also said he'd seen holes on his neck, like the, quote, smoking people on TV. It was one of the most head-scratching cases he'd worked on. Story 4. From time to time, Owen had heard reports of compasses taking a full 180 turn. Sometimes the crew wouldn't even notice. They'd be heading west, and at some point, and half an hour later, they'd find themselves twice as far from their destination, having gone east instead. He said it happened to him once, but they noticed the change fast enough to change directions before going too far. They blamed the electromagnetic field or some science thing, but I don't know much about that to say for sure. Story 5. There was a time when they had a shark migration happening. They made sure to tell everyone to avoid the area. One guy didn't listen though, and purposely went out there to see the migration happen live. The call went in not long after. A large patch of blood spotted on the shark's migration trail. When they went out to investigate, they were surprised to see a man in a small boat. Same curious guy that had ignored the order was the one that made the call. The blood patch was huge apparently, made up from the remains of dozens of sharks. At first, they thought the sharks had attacked each other for some reason, but then they stumbled upon one that had had half its body bitten off. Just down to the freaking middle, Owner told me. We're talking about a shark about 6 to 8 feet long, about 2 meters, that Owen described as being bitten in half by something even larger. Hell, if I know any animal capable of biting a shark in half and then leave the carcass behind, much less one that would feast on an entire school of sharks. Story 6. The last story I'll share is probably one of the weirdest. Owen said he'd been introduced to this not long after joining. Said the other guys would chuckle whenever it was reported, but would ignore it and just go about the day after. He didn't understand why at first, but everyone told him it was best not to ask questions and to never ask the superiors about them. It seems that from time to time, while patrolling, teams would report finding these random sandbars in the open sea. The sandbars would always have large, odd-looking patches of vegetation growing around them, sometimes of different shapes and colour. Owen said the things would disappear within a day, sometimes even within a few hours. The orders for them were simple enough. If you see one, report it. If it disappears, report that too. Never approach them. Most importantly, don't mention them to anyone on the outside. That last rule is out now though. Whoops. They'd been very specific when they told Owen not to pay them too much attention, and he did just that. I could tell he was really curious about them though, but he insisted he'd grown used to them, to the point he'd juggle along with the guys whenever they were reported. Owen told me a lot of the stories through the years, so if anyone is interested, I'd be open to share more of them. If anyone has any theories or explanations of any of the things I've mentioned, let me know. So I came back on recently and was surprised to see many of you found interest in Owen's stories. Sorry it took so long for me to update this, but I wanted to make sure I wrote the stories as clearly as possible. Let me talk about some of the things you guys mentioned first. First of all, a number of you guys seemed to be interested in the sandbars and even threw in some theories. I'll have a story for that later. Owen never mentioned going on any of the sandbars. They were forbidden from even getting near. But that didn't mean there weren't some close calls. Like I had mentioned, the vegetation always appeared different. Colour and size. While most were underwater, there were times where he'd tell me about tall plants around them, sometimes even the size of small trees. It's hard to imagine what they could be. One of you even mentioned they might be the backs of giant creatures, as if the ocean wasn't frightening enough. Second, there was a mention that the shark blood patch might have been caused by orcas. While it's a possibility, it's hard to imagine any animal taking on a whole school of sharks, even an orca. Maybe if they were in a group it would be possible. But you'd think there would be orca carcasses too though, right? Owen told me they'd only spotted shark remains from what was even recognisable. Tough to say what it really could have been. Third, as far as I know, Owen didn't see any stairs on the ocean floor. Sorry if that disappoints anyone. Remember that Owen is only one of many working out there though, and that most of the ocean floor has not yet been fully mapped. The possibilities are endless. Now, let's get on to the stories, yeah? First story. There were many cases of missing people, and many of them, if not most, typically involved children. Of course, there were some cases with adults too. A particularly disturbing one involved a male diver who'd gone out one Saturday afternoon. His wife would usually accompany him, but she hadn't been feeling well and told him to go alone. When her husband didn't return that night, she called it in. Owen's team found the boat the next day. When they boarded, they found the man still in his diving suit. He was freaking out and had suffered a head wound. He was speaking fast, and the team had a hard time calming him down enough to understand what had happened. According to this guy, everything had been going well until he came back up to his boat. He said there was someone just standing in the middle of it, their back turned towards him. They were naked, dripping wet, and looked extremely scrawny from behind. The guy didn't spot any other boats or anything nearby, so he asked if they were okay and where they'd come from. When he walked up to this person, they turned around, and where his face was supposed to be, he only saw a long, vertical line. This line, according to the guy, was its mouth, which had opened to reveal rows of pointed teeth, quote, like a shark. The guy freaked the hell out, moving backwards and fell overboard, hitting his head on the side of the boat. He said he almost passed out, but when he heard a loud splash next to him, the adrenaline kicked in. He climbed back into the boat and boarded up in the cabin. He tried to start the boat, but it wouldn't turn on. He was convinced that the thing had messed with it somehow. He was stuck. Through the night, he claimed he could hear the thing jumping in and out of the water, waiting for him. Owen's team thought he might have hit his head during the dive and might have hallucinated. One of them even suggested he might have been coming off something. They couldn't say for sure. It's a bit disturbing, and one that still gives me chills from time to time. Story 2. There were times that Owen would see large rock formations in the distance. He tried to get closer, but he'd never be able to reach them. Migraines are a thing, of course, and that's what they would often write them up to be. Owen wanted to believe this as well, but there were times the formations would be the shape of large monoliths. He said if he stared at them long enough, he could see movement happening around them. Large, bird-like creatures flying about. I want to think there's a rational explanation for this, but it's still really strange. Story 3. There was another case where an older man, about 68 years old I believe, went missing. He was an author on a solo trip, and when he didn't dock on the scheduled date, search parties were formed. They found his sailboat not long after, empty, and his belongings scattered around the vessel. They searched the area for days, but no traces of him were found. Having gathered a small following from his travels, independent searches were done on the side. Surprisingly enough, one of the searches actually found a shoe and watch that might have belonged to the man. This boosted morale, and the searches continued far longer than first planned. Unfortunately, they never found anything else. It's a sad story, but the weirdest part about it? When they first boarded the old man's boat and found everything scattered around, they found the old man's other shoe, upside down, on the head of the sailboat. That's the top of the sail. This left Owen's team scratching their heads. Why and how it got there? Your guess is as good as mine. Story 4. On one of Owen's first times going out on patrol, he overheard someone radio a RSB sighting. He had no clue what it meant, but didn't want to sound stupid. One of the older guys there caught his expression and nudged the others. They called him over and asked if he had any questions. Owen came clean and nervously asked what an RSB was. The guys chuckled, told him to relax, and that they didn't expect him to know the code. They changed course and soon brought him out for a view. Less than a kilometer away, about half a mile, Owen saw the sea take on a lighter shade of green. Tall plants poked out of the ocean around what looked like a small sandbar. Owen asked them what the hell that was, since it wasn't something he'd seen on any of the maps. One of Owen's buddies, a guy by the name of Brandon, tells him it's a random sandbar. He explains that they'll appear from time to time, so he better start getting used to them now. Owen didn't understand what he meant by them appearing, but Brandon explained these weren't always going to be in the same place, and not all of them would look like this. Sometimes the sandbars would be at a higher elevation. Sometimes the vegetation wouldn't be the same color or size, or even the same type. When he found one, he was to report it immediately. If he ever passed by and it was gone, he had to report that as well. Owen understood, then asked if they could get closer to get a better look. Brandon chuckled, told him the further away he stayed from them, the better. When he asked why, Brandon told him not to ask too many questions. Owen took this to mean that Brandon didn't know the answer himself. When he asked if he knew of anyone who'd gotten closer to the sandbars, Brandon declined to answer and said that they were forbidden from getting closer to them. Attempting to stand on them was out of the question. That if he wanted to stay in the Coast Guard, he better make sure to follow these rules and to never ask a superior about them. Like he'd said, Owen would be seeing them a lot, so Brandon wanted to make sure this was clear. Owen just nodded, not really buying the fact that random pieces of land and vegetation could just pop up or disappear. Brandon had been right though. Owen would often tell me about how he spotted another one every other week. The smallest he ever saw was barely 10 feet long, but it was surrounded by tall, violet vegetation taking the shape of small trees. The longest he saw was at least the size of a football field. This one was ragged, mustard-colored vegetation that barely poked above the water. The sandbar was at a higher elevation as well. Owen itched to get closer to one, but he knew better than to disobey the commands. From time to time, he'd try asking around, very casually of course, and never to a superior. But he was always told to ignore them and not to give them much thought. I always thought he'd get a better answer one day. If he did though, he never told me. Story 5. I can't remember if Owen was actually involved with this next one, but I do remember him sharing it with me one night. There was this scuba diving expedition, mostly made up of tourists, I believe. They took their groups out to one of the better spots where they could see all the good stuff. You know, like the turtles and the colourful fish and stuff. What the tourists like and all. So, the 20 or 30 minutes they charge for are up, and the crew starts blowing their whistle or whatever to get the tourists back to the boat. Everyone comes back and they start counting them, making sure no one's left behind in open water and all. This woman and her daughter are looking around at everyone as the counting is happening, and when the crew says they've got everyone, the woman objects. She tells them they are missing one more person. The crew asks her what she means, and she tells them how her and her daughter had been watching the turtles when another diver in a white suit came up to them from behind. He motioned for them to follow him, and both did. He guided them through some of the corals and towards the entrance of some underwater caves. They claimed the view was amazing from outside, but the mother realized they were starting to get too far from where the boat was, and was scared they wouldn't hear the crew call them back. She grabbed her daughter and started to swim back. The daughter said she looked behind them and saw the diver floating by the cave entrance, waving at her. The crew was confused when they heard the story, especially because all of their gear was either blue or black. They counted everyone again to make sure. One of the crew even went back in the water to see if they could find the diver, but there was no one else around except for the turtles and some fish. He couldn't even find the caves they had mentioned. Everyone felt uncomfortable when they had no other choice but to go, ignoring the thought that they might be leaving another diver behind. It's possible the crew called it in and some further search being done at the area, and that's how it eventually got to Owen. But, like I said, I'm not entirely sure where Owen got it from, but I just know it freaked me out when he told me. Story 6. The last story I'll share today is actually a bit funny. It depends on your sense of humour though. Mine can be a little screwed up. Owen once told me about an anonymous call about possible drug smugglers in the area. Apparently the person on the phone had sounded more ticked off than worried, which stood out to the responders. They sent the team out to check it out. While no drug smugglers were caught, what they did find was a boat of 8 college kids, anchored and high off their mind. So, they gather these kids upright, do a head count, take their IDs, search the boat for drugs, ask for their story, the whole thing, you know. So they manage to ID 6 of them and find no additional drugs apart from some alcohol. The others are either too gone to understand or claim they can't remember where their IDs are. One of Owen's buddies tries to play good cop on the kids, tells them that if the 3 can just come clean and let them do their job, they'll escort them back to land and let the 9 of them off with only a warning. Owen said one of the girls got really confused at the statement, although she didn't say anything about it. She just had a look, he told me. He thought it was just the drugs at the moment. It took some time, but the remaining 3 eventually gave them what they needed. Turns out the boat belonged to one of the kids, a gift from their rich yet uninvolved father for doing who knows what in school. The trip was to celebrate the whole event, and of course, someone had to bring some pot. It seems that at that point on the trip, they had crossed paths with another boat, and a few of the kids had made lewd comments and gestures at them. The other boat had held a family, including younger kids and one teen. It didn't take long for Owen's team to put 2 and 2 together and assume that the family had been the ones to make the original call. So, they ended up taking these kids and their boat back to the mainland and give the boat owner a fine of $500. As they were exiting the boat, Owen's team does another head count, but comes up with 8 this time. They stop the kids and count them again, coming up with the same result. They ask them who's missing, but they say they're all there. Not believing them, the team checks the boat, but can't find the missing kid. They decide to call out their names until they get to one that no one answers to. It was something like Marion or Gioran or Gioren. I can't remember exactly, so apologies for that. All the kids are confused at this point, since they have no idea who that is. The girl that had looked confused before tells them that all 8 of them are there now. But Evan, the one who tried to play good cop, says that they counted 9. The kids look at each other and try to remember if there had been an extra person they'd forgotten about, recalling how they'd gone to the owner's house in 2 cars, 3 in one and 4 in the other, plus the owner would make 8. That's when one of the kids starts freaking out. He starts yelling about how when they were anchored, he remembered seeing this other person with them. He wasn't sure who he was, but didn't want to seem rude and was honestly too high to care. Another one of the kids then remembered as well, said they saw this guy just walking around, taking some food, having a few drinks. He looked like he'd just come out of the water because he was dripping it everywhere. That's when all the kids go pale, as if they were remembering simultaneously that there had been some wet, unknown guy on their boat for hours. The owner recalled seeing the trail of water all around the boat and getting ticked off because he almost fell. Each kid started telling their own experience with a stranger, from conversations with them to sharing a blunt. One of them even claimed he'd asked her if she wanted to go to another part of the boat with him for some time alone, but she declined the offer. Despite all this, no one ever questioned his being there. The team had some trouble believing the story, but they couldn't find the other person and just ended up letting the kids go. Owen told me the story incredibly puzzled, but also half laughing because he could only imagine how high they had to be to not question a stranger just showing up to your boat in the middle of the ocean and staying there for hours. These have been by far the most bizarre stories Owen ever told me before passing. His wife and I occasionally meet just to see how things are going. She took his passing quite hard, as did most of us who were close to him, so it helped to have someone to lean on about it. She's actually mentioned a few things Owen told her about the job in the past, so I wonder if Owen ever told her any stories she didn't tell me. I still do have a few more stories as well, so if you guys want to hear more, just let me know. And like I said last time, if you have any theories that could explain anything I mentioned, please let me know. Thanks for listening. I know it's been a while, but a number of things have happened that's kept me from being able to write this all down. I'm really glad to know you're all enjoying Owen's stories this much. Like in the previous part, I'll start by addressing some of the things you guys brought up. First, as far as location goes, I can say that Owen was in one of the United States' major coasts. I'm unsure of the repercussions that could come from having shared Owen's stories, so I want to remain as anonymous as possible. He still has a wife and kids here after all, and the last thing I want is for something to happen to them if they're ever suspected of being involved with this. Second, someone asked about Owen's passing on the last update, so I wanted to cover a bit more of that here. If you're triggered by the mentions of suicide, this is your warning. Like I said in the first part, Owen began to change a lot from his experiences on the Coast Guard. He was more distant, much more in his head. He'd be distracted often and easily scared. His wife would find him up late at night in his study, reading, researching, looking up who knows what. It was troubling because it wasn't the same Owen we knew and cared for. We tried to help however we could, and it seemed to work at times, but overall, we couldn't stop whatever had gotten into his head. One night, Owen just up and left his house sometime after midnight. His wife didn't realize until the following morning. He'd usually spend most nights in his study, so she thought he'd been there all along. We found his car that day in a nearby harbor. We weren't sure where he had gone until his shoes and clothes were found by the shore. It was too early to start assuming, but a lot of us already had an idea of what could have happened. Still, we went out to the ocean to search for any signs of him while others continued searching on land as well. It wasn't until a few days later when his body was washed up on shore. A lifeguard found him early enough to secure the area before anyone else spotted it. His wife called me sobbing with the news, and I don't think I'll ever be able to forget that phone call. Owen had been my best friend, someone I'd grown up with and always had by my side. It still remains one of the worst days for me. His wife asked me to come with her to identify the body. When we got there, they pulled the covers down. I saw Owen. It was him, just as he had been when he was alive, and this in itself was confusing. I had assumed that Owen had drowned after all, and therefore had assumed his body would be, well, messed up in some way. Puffed and big, or just something signalling decomposition. Yet Owen looked like he was still Owen. No enlarged skin, no unnatural colour. You could have told me he was sleeping, and I would have believed it. The medical people told us he died of a heart attack. I tried asking more questions, but they didn't tell me anything. If they told his wife, then she never shared the information with me. Now, for today's stories. Story 1. A dinghy is found by a cargo ship. Inside is a man, along with the body of a child. The man tells the investigators that he was the captain of a large sailboat that had been caught in a bad storm and sunk down. The sailboat had apparently held a family of four, along with the man and his own wife. He claimed to have found the body of the child from the wreckage and attempted to resuscitate them, but had been unsuccessful. He explained that the father of the family had hired him to take the family to a nearby island for a vacation. With no other survivors from the incident, they have no option but to believe the man. 5 days later, Owen and his team are doing patrol when they get a report of a kid being picked up from a small inflatable raft. The kid was badly burned from the sunlight, dehydrated, and basically on the verge of death. Any longer, and she wouldn't have lived to tell a story. From what Owen told me, after the girl recovered, she told the investigators how she managed to escape a sinking sailboat in the middle of the night after waking up and finding the vessel sinking. She told them she'd been with her family on vacation and how she found both her mother and father dead on the deck after waking up. The captain was there and he told her to go back down to the cabin and stay there until he told her to come up. Scared, the kid obeyed. She looked at her parents one last time and went back down. It wasn't until the water got up to her waist that she decided to go back up. The captain was gone at this point, as were the bodies of her parents. The boat was soon to follow them. She didn't wait for that to happen though, and quickly rushed to get the inflatable raft on the water. When asked how she managed to survive all those days, she said that the, quote, chubby dolphins had brought her food once a day. They usually swam around her in the days, and at night, the bigger things would swim below. When asked if she could describe what they looked like, the kid said she never actually saw them, only their shape far below the water. It didn't take long for the investigators to put the two stories together and start searching for the man. They eventually found him in a hostel. He'd checked in under a false name and had used a razor blade to take matters into his own hands. A further look into the man's history would reveal a series of suspicious incidents he had been involved with, which included previous wives and insurance money. It seems as though as soon as the man found out the kid survived, he'd gone to the motel to end it. With her family gone, the kid went to stay with an aunt in another part of the country. Owen said she looked fine, thankfully, but the entire story itself was a tragedy that stayed with him. Story 2. There's a lot of creatures out in the ocean. Owen saw multitudes of them through the years, sometimes from far, sometimes even close enough to touch them. He knew which ones were safe and which ones could easily end you in under a few minutes. Shark sightings came and went, but one thing, Owen told me, was both majestic to see, but also scary as hell if they were too close, was whales. One particular story involved a guy who was kayaking just out in the open ocean for some reason. His family reported him missing after a few hours of not having heard from him. Search team goes out and finds the man stranded on a buoy. When they asked what happened, the man tells them how things had been going well until this massive whale just knocked him out of the kayak and proceeded to sink it. He all but stared down at the animal before swimming faster than he ever had before to the buoy, while the whale chased him down. The man had looked at Owen and told him it was the biggest thing he had ever seen. I know this one wasn't actually scary, but Owen and I had a great laugh about it for a few nights. Story 3. This next one is probably one of the freakiest stories Owen told me. I can still picture him shaking as he told me what had happened. I can't say it didn't freak me out as well, but it was one thing to hear it, and a completely other thing to experience it. Owen said it started out with a search for a missing boat. Two sisters had gone out to the ocean for a day off and away from everything. Hours had passed though, and no one heard anything back from them. Teams were dispatched to search for the girls, and Owen's was a three-man team with Brandon on board as well. The team searched for the rest of the day, but none by air nor sea could spot the girls' boat. Night had fallen at this, and Owen's team was called back. They decided to do one last sweep of the area before returning. Keep in mind, it's pitch black at this point, since they're not near the coast at all. Owen told me the boat was going really slow, and he and Brandon stood outside, looking around with searchlights, when he suddenly started to feel dizzy. He was about to tell Brandon, when the boat came to a halt. Owen recalled being unable to let go of the side of the boat, fearful he might fall. But he yelled out to Brandon. Brandon shouted from another end of the boat and told him he was feeling, quote, heavy as hell and couldn't move his legs. Owen was about to tell him he felt the same way when a high-pitched sound burst through his eardrums. He told me it was like someone blowing a whistle through a megaphone right on your ears. He fell to the ground, screaming for Brandon, but he couldn't even hear his own voice through the noise. He looked around trying to find the source. His mind raced to figure what could even make a noise like that. Just as he felt like his head might explode, the sound started to fade. Owen regained his composure, although his ears were still ringing. He met up with Brandon and the third member of the team, who were asking themselves what the hell just happened. Obviously, neither of them had any answers. They didn't sit on it for too long and agreed to head back to land immediately. If they were to try figure it out, it would not be in the middle of the pitch black ocean. It was barely a few minutes later when they began moving when Brendan told the third guy to kill the engine. Owen didn't ask him what's going on, but he shushed him and asked him to listen. For a moment, Owen only heard the sound of waves hitting the boat. The wind had died down and the ringing in his ears was all but gone. Then, in the distance, he heard it. Wailing. Someone sobbed in long, whining noises. Owen tried to hear the direction it was coming from, but he couldn't pinpoint it. Whatever it was, he heard it all around them, and it was definitely growing louder. The three of them stepped out, and as soon as they did, the wailing stopped. Brandon called out using the names of the girls, but there was no response. The three of them looked at each other for a minute, then Brandon tried to call out the girls' names again. The name hadn't even left his mouth when the most fear-filled shriek blasted around them. It was the closest Owen came to messing his pants that night. Owen said the thing was deafening. The third guy ran back inside and turned the boat on. The engine roared to life as the shriek flat out stopped. They rocked forward, but the engine died again, along with the searchlights and all of the lights inside the boat. Yeah, they were actually in the pitch black now. Brandon was cursing now. The other guy was trying the radio along with Owen. All three were on the verge of panic when they hear something. A soft voice. I get chills just remembering how Owen told me how it all went down. He said it was a girl's voice, loud and clear, speaking outside their boat. It said, "Help me, please help me." The three of them looked outside, and even in the pitch black, they could see the silhouette of a person. They were submerged at their waist, their upper body stuck out of the water and appeared to be facing them. There were some sniffles coming from the silhouette. They were sobbing. Brandon asked if they were all right, but Owen felt like something was off. He tried to tell him, but Brandon walked closer to the edge. Brandon asked if they could swim closer to the boat. The silhouette didn't move, but they heard it again. "Help me, please help me," followed by a number of sniffles and sobs. Owen told me a wave of fear passed down his body, and he froze. Brandon stopped right where he was, just a few feet away from the edge. Owen shouted at it, his voice breaking, and asked what it wanted. The two of them waited. The silhouette still didn't move. He could hear the sniffles, but he realized that the noises weren't coming from the figure. He whispered at Brandon when it happened again. "Help me, please help," followed by the sniffles and sobs. Owen and Brandon didn't say anything to each other. They just both ran back inside and shut the door behind them. The crying, the sniffles, it wasn't coming from whatever that silhouette was. Something else was making the noise. Owen said whatever it was had been surrounding the boat, repeating the sounds over and over again. Each time, The noises sounded closer, and the last one sounded like it was right by the boat. The three men stayed inside the boat for a few minutes, the third guy trying to get the boat to turn back on. Suddenly, the light came back, the motor roared to life, all three of them jumped at the power returning. They didn't waste any time and put the vessel on full speed back to land, not stopping or slowing down until they docked. Brandon and Owen both asked some of the others that had been out if they had seen or heard anything weird, but no one could say that they had. Say what you want to say, but Owen was freaking the hell out when he told me about this, and I still think it's scary as hell. I don't even like to mess with the dark in my own home, but I can be a little brave from time to time when I get hungry in the middle of the night. But the dark in the middle of the ocean, where you can't run away or leave, and have no idea what might be waiting for you in the water? No. Hell no. As for the sisters, they didn't find them. They did find what some thought could have been the remains of their boat, but I never found out if it was verified or not. Story 4. So I mentioned last time how I would try to see if Owen's wife had any stories he might have not mentioned to me. Long story short, she didn't. At least she said she didn't. When I asked her about it over the phone, she got really quiet. I had to make sure the call hadn't dropped until she spoke up again. She suggested I speak to Brandon if I was interested, as he wasn't in the Coast Guard anymore, and even gave me his contact info. She said Owen had mentioned Brandon a number of times, and if anyone had stories to tell, it'd be him. I'd actually spoken to Brandon once before, in Owen's funeral. He hadn't been looking too well, and mostly remained secluded from the bigger groups there. It was a short conversation, if I could even call it that. He'd come up and offered his condolences, then retreated and disappeared from the funeral entirely. It's something that stands out to me even now. When I called him, the line remained quiet on the other end. I said, "Hello," again, and a low voice asked who was calling. I introduced myself and asked him if he remembered me from the funeral. He ignored the question and asked what I wanted. I got to the point and brought up some of Owen's stories, casually mentioning the sandbars. He cut me off. "Shut the hell up. You need to shut the hell up right now," he whispered into the phone. I wasn't sure what to say, but he continued, "You need to meet me tonight, 8 p.m. He proceeded to give me directions rather than an address, and then warned not to answer any unknown calls. He hung up. I was confused, but also concerned that Brandon might not be doing well. He sounded paranoid, and the warning was bizarre on its own. Did he think someone was listening to us? I considered not showing to the 8 p.m. appointment, but something told me I should. The directions he gave led me to a small local diner. Not many people were in, but I spotted him in one of the booths in a corner. He wore a dark jacket and a hat that covered half his face. He looked up when I walked in, so I could recognize him, but I barely did. He had a long, wavy beard and heavy-looking bags under his eyes. He'd lost weight as well, which only added to how bad he looked. He told me a lot of things, some that I'll disclose after the stories. But man, this whole thing is freaky, honestly. One of the stories he told me was actually the previous one I just shared with the silhouette and the noises. Brandon helped fill a lot of the blanks for me. This next story talks more about a time before Owen had joined in. A new guy had joined their ranks recently, and they were out in one of their first patrols. Let's call this guy Jerry for clarity. So, they're pretty out there, and Jerry was just keeping an eye out for anything when he spots something and quickly goes to tell the others. When the rest of the guys check it out, they chuckle amongst themselves and actually get closer to it so Jerry can get a better look. If you haven't guessed now, Jerry spotted one of the sandbars. As they get closer, the team gives Jerry the explanations and warnings as they did with Owen. If you see one, report it. If it disappears, report that too. Never approach them. They made sure he understood before going back to chuckling and laughing about them. I actually asked Brandon why they laughed, but he said it had been a thing they did. No real explanation to it, and they couldn't really ask about it. Jerry seemed to understand the rules, but like anyone else, he had questions too. How could he not? Hell, Brandon admitted he had questions too, but most were never answered. Out of everything he'd asked though, there had been one thing that had jumped out at Brandon. It wasn't even so much the question, but how he'd asked it. So, no one has been on them before? Keep in mind, this was at a point when all the guys were laughing about it and the serious tone had dropped. Brandon told him he hadn't liked how Jerry asked the question, almost as if he was taking it as a challenge. Brandon even went as far as talking to the more experienced member of their team about it. He told him that he would be keeping an eye on him, but not to worry. Brandon remained skeptical about it and would actually keep an eye on Jerry for some time. Nothing happened for some time, and Brandon eventually backed off. That was until Brandon was away for some time. He said he didn't even remember why he was away, but when he came back, he noticed Jerry wasn't there anymore. He asked some of the guys, but they told him to talk to the more experienced member about it. They didn't want to say anything that wasn't theirs to say. When Brandon asked the experienced member, he said that Jerry's wife had a miscarriage and that he'd gone home. Brandon didn't buy it and continued to push the guy for more answers. He didn't understand why the others wouldn't have just mentioned that to begin with, and why Jerry had never mentioned his wife being pregnant in the first place. The experienced member didn't like this. He dragged Brandon into a room and locked the door, then ordered him to sit down and keep this stuff to himself. Brandon didn't understand what was going on at first. The guy sat in front of him, scratching his head, rubbing his head, trying to get the words together. He told him they weren't supposed to be discussing this, but he asked Brandon if he remembered the warning about Jerry and the sandbars. Brandon said he did, and the guy told him he'd been right. He didn't go into the details of how it happened, but he said Jerry had somehow done it. He'd gone to one of the sandbars. The guy told Brandon they'd seen him on it, waving, dancing on it, just looking around. Brandon only assumed he must have swam to it because the guy wouldn't answer how Jerry had reached out without the boat. Nothing happened to Jerry in the short time he was on the sandbar, and when he came back, he was all smiles, telling them how someone had finally gone on one. The guys asked if he was alright, if he felt anything or had seen anything. Jerry told them there had been a slight sense of vertigo when he stood up on it, but it quickly went away. His body had felt heavier, and there was a feeling of dread as if he'd turn around and find someone standing behind him. Other than that, nothing really happened. He chalked everything to be a mental thing because of how mysterious the sandbars had been made out to be. When he heard about this, the more experienced members confronted Jerry, told him he was an idiot and clearly didn't know how to obey clear orders. It was hours later when the call came through about Jerry's wife. He hadn't even known she was pregnant. That's a sensitive issue on its own, but apparently Jerry really loved his wife and wasn't about to jump into any conclusions. He headed out to see her just as a storm brewing. Bad storm, the guy had said. The type that knocks down big ass branches all over the roads and makes the ocean go crazy. Last he heard of Jerry, he'd made it to the hospital and was going to look for his wife's room number. After that, there was nothing. The experienced member told him that was all he knew. Brandon asked if it was because of the sandbar, although he admitted to me that it sounded insane to even ask. But the guy didn't respond directly, just saying that bad things happen when people get too close. He didn't want to hear from anything about Jerry after that. To this day, he has no clue what happened to him. Story 5. These next ones aren't exactly stories, but Brandon mentioned some of the most awful things he'd seen out there. Most of the things he told me involved the recovery of bodies. In the ocean, most bodies tend to sink as they get filled up with water, and if they wash up on shore, they're usually eaten by animals. However, there were times when they'd somehow find bits and pieces of people that appeared to have been left behind by some unknown predator. Out in nature, he said, your age, beliefs, gender or race didn't matter. If you got lost, chances are something would be coming for you one way or another. He talked about finding the bodies of so many kids, and a lot of the elderly too. Clothes were torn from wherever the creatures decided to take bites out of the bodies. Their skins pale and grossly deformed, eyes bulging out, if they still had them. It was part of the job, he'd said, and with time, one was desensitized to the horrors of death they'd see. Some had stayed with him though. Memories, like pictures in his head, would not go away. He listed them to me, as if their order had been memorized in his mind. The body of a surfer who'd gone missing months prior. His arm and part of his torso had been ripped off. A GoPro camera was still attached to his head. He'd washed up on shore one morning. No one knew how the body had managed to not sink to the bottom of the ocean, or how it had stayed in one piece apart from the arm and torso. The GoPro was still functional, didn't provide any clues, and the last video was entirely corrupted. The upper body of a teenage girl. After the tide had gone down, they found her arms sticking out of the sand. Her hand was bent in an abnormal position, and everything below her waist appeared to have been ripped off. A pair of severed feet in an inflatable raft. They belonged to two different people. Nothing else from either one was found. The body of an elderly man found by scuba divers. His clothes were gone. The body was entirely intact somehow, except for the head, which had been removed at the neck. The remains of a child, body and all, except for the eyes and the eyelids, which had been removed. The autopsy later revealed the body was also missing a kidney, the large intestine, and both lungs. Story 6. This last story involves the search for a lost vessel after a storm. Brandon was working with a group of divers on this one. The diving team in his group was made up of three people, two men and a woman. The three went under in the later hours of the day, while Brandon and the crew stayed above, waiting for their return. Time passed as the diving team didn't seem to be finding any sign of the vessel when their communication was suddenly lost. It would have been fine had they only lost contact with one of the divers, but they lost contact with all three. Brandon panicked, but the veteran of the group advised that he needed to relax. If they didn't hear back soon, they'd radio for assistance. Brandon was still pretty new himself when this happened, so he did as he was told. It wasn't too long after that when they heard someone come up from the water, followed by loud gasps of air. He rushed to the side of the boat and spotted the three divers. Their masks were off and their gear was missing. The team helped the divers back up, and Brandon could immediately tell something was off. The veteran member spoke up first though, and asked what happened and where their gear was. One of the male divers explained that the group had seen a shape on the ocean floor that they thought might have been the lost ship, so they moved in. He said he wasn't sure how or when it happened, but at some point, the three got separated. He tried talking to the team above, but that's when he noticed that contact had been lost. He sought to keep going either way, realizing that he was bound to run into the others if they were headed in the same direction. As he got closer, he said he started to feel bad. He described the feeling as if he were falling asleep. His vision clouded, but he remained fully conscious. He noticed the closer he got to the object, the worse he felt. It eventually got to the point where he felt like his body had gone completely numb. Only then did he decide to turn back, but the feeling still didn't go away. The gear began to feel heavier then, causing him to struggle even more on his way back. At one point, he said he even let himself fall because his limbs started to burn from the effort. He continued to struggle, until he finally got close enough to the surface to lose the gear and swim up. He claimed he didn't see either of the other two divers until he came out of the water. The veteran member stared at him for a moment, his stern expression never wavering, then turned to the other two and asked if that's what happened to them. They nodded without adding anything else. Although it was weird as hell, Brandon still felt like more was off. The expression of the two divers' faces told him there was. They not only looked scared, but also confused and slightly disoriented. The veteran member gathered the entire team and ordered them not to mention this to anyone. They hadn't found any sign of the ship, and that would be tragic, but maybe others had had better luck. The dive was to stay between them only, and the gear had accidentally been lost in the ocean. Brandon thought someone would question the order, any of it, but no one spoke up or said anything regarding it, so he saw no other choice but to agree as well. He wasn't done though, and when they got back to mainland, he went to talk to the divers. He found the two in one of the rooms. The woman was crying, and the man looked similarly distraught. They tried to pull themselves together when he walked in, but Brandon told them to relax and asked them what was going on. The man tried to tell him they were fine, just still shaken up by what happened, but the woman wasn't having it. She said they needed to tell someone. The man tried to argue, and they went back and forth for a minute, until he finally caved. The woman looked up to Brandon, and started to tell him how for the most part, everything that the other diver had said was right, except for the part where they got separated. What they told him was that, after they lost communication, they approached the shape on the ocean floor. They didn't know what it was, but right before they turned back, they realized something was coming towards them from the shape's direction. They tried to outswim it, but it was fast. When they looked back, whatever it was had pulled down the third diver. They tried to reach down for him, but whatever it was took him all the way down and then more, as if the body was swallowed by the earth. The other two made a swim for the surface, ditching their gear until they were out. It only took a second for them to realize the other diver was there too. The team helped them onto the boat, and the rest was what Brandon had seen himself. When she was done, the only thing that came to Brandon's mind was where the man was. Not the diver, but whoever it was that had come up with the two. Brandon told them he needed to tell the veteran member about it, and they agreed. The team looked for the man everywhere, but they never found a trace of him. It was all kept between them, with the veteran handling it with the higher-ups, and nothing was ever done after that. As usual, this was much more longer than I anticipated, but it felt necessary to properly go over the things that Brandon told me. When he was done, he cautioned me about sharing these stories with anyone. He could understand my curiosity, but it wasn't in my best interest to attempt to share these stories or even try to look into them. He went over this whole bigger powers at play speech and different theories he had about them. There was a point where he began to get paranoid, looking around the diner, looking at the windows. He said I'd been there too long and that I needed to lay low now that they had probably seen me with him. I didn't know what to say to him, but he pushed, made me swear I wouldn't go around making dumbass calls like I had with him, at least for some time. He said if I needed to talk to him again, to come to this diner and leave a note taped under the exact same table we sat on. He said it might take a while, but eventually he'd respond. Then he got up, left a few bills and left. I'm not going to say I believe him, but after some thought, I've decided that I'll be taking a break from these stories now. Owen was truly one of my closest friends, and I feel like I've shared so many of his stories already. There's more, of course, but for now, I believe it's best to let it be.